Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
And now, a presentation on the Mental Health News Radio Network. The Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show.
Ryan, that is a freaking awesome question.
You are the power, and you do not need anybody's permission.
He's the only guy that ever crawled out of a grave where people didn't go, oh, ah!
Don't worry, don't be afraid, ever,
because this is just a ride.
You're a great interviewer. You're one of the best.
If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed.
It is a joy to welcome to our show today, Mr. Steve Falconer. He is a individualist anarchist. He's somebody who questions a lot, and you can learn more about him by going to his BitChute channel at Spacebusters. And Steve, is there another location where people can find you?
Odyssey and YouTube a little bit, and Dollar Vigilante. Jeff Berwick gave us a channel, and we never asked, which was great. We found out by surprise we had a Vigilante TV channel. We never even asked for it, so that was really cool.
It's cool, and my understanding is you're also going to be speaking at Anarchapulco this year as well.
I'm going to be speaking, and I'm going to be introducing all the medical doctor friends of mine on day four, and I'm running the fundraiser auction. I made some paintings. You want to see my paintings?
I would love to see your paintings.
So, I'm going to be speaking and also introducing and auctioning.
Okay.
So that should be good.
Well, one of the first things I want to discuss with you is, mentioned in the beginning, before we even started, that when it comes to looking what the Earth really is, about a year and a half ago, a good friend of mine was telling me, he's like, you know, I don't think the Earth is a round sphere. And I was like, what's wrong with it? What do you? And he was telling me all these reasons. I started doing research on myself, and I'm looking around, and I have a lot of doubts about the nature of this plane of existence. My old teacher used to call it the Earth plane, and I always thought that he was dropping a hint or a clue. And when I see some of these experiments where people do these experiments where they're trying to do a line of sight, and apparently you can see something from 90 miles away, I'm like, how would it be possible the Earth is curving? So from your perspective, Steve, can you please give me a couple of reasons why you think that the Earth is not a round sphere and that we are not in space and that this is a different reality or a different plane of existence than what we're being told?
Well, for starters, yeah, Ross and I were the same. I used to make fun of flat earthers. I had to eat a lot of humble pie. You know, I used to make fun of them. I was like, you're fucking crazy. You're retarded. Like, that's where I draw the line. And then Ross, the other space buster and I, we got a P900 camera, which can zoom in miles and miles. And we can sit here in Denmark and we can zoom in on the island where our farm is in Bornholm. It's 90 miles away. And we can see the island. It's supposed to be under two times the height of the Sears Tower, Empire State Building, or the tallest building in Dubai. There it is. In fact, we were on the island looking at Poland, which is 58 miles away, which is supposed to be under one of the Empire State Buildings. And I could see the land curving down. And I said to this guy I was standing out there with, I said, can you see the land over there? And he said, that's impossible. If it's under the curve of the Earth, I'm like, but there it is. Can't you see it with your bare eyes without a camera? Like, can you see the two fucking Earth shifts? So, and then we started zooming into the stars and doing distance tests, and we started driving to different places. And I was like, holy shit. And you do water level tests. And like,
well, wait, when it comes to stars, what were you seeing when you were zooming into stars? What did you ultimately see?
Well, they look like they're underwater. Like, first of all, they're cymatic. It's you know when you're looking on they're not planets, they're like electromagnetic things shifting in colors and whatever. They look like they're underwater.
Okay.
You know, when the sun, you know, when you're in the swimming pool and the sun hits the bottom of the pool and all this shit's shifting around, it looks like that. So they're not there. When you look at Saturn with a P900 camera, they're flying around this and that. You can see the rings on Saturn, but you don't, it doesn't, it's not a planet. Like when NASA says, well, I've seen this and it looks like that. First of all, you shouldn't see it with a P900. You shouldn't even see the sun. You shouldn't see the moon. You shouldn't be able to read a book. So when you really, it sounds ridiculous. Flat Earth sounds ridiculous until you try to debunk it, which is what we came at it with. Because I was like, because Ross, the other space buster, he was a space guy. Like he grew up his whole life space. I had dinosaurs when I was a kid, you know, like you had something when you were a kid. And I said, like, look at this. What do you think of this? And at first he was vehemently opposed to it. And after a month, I kept saying, well, what about this? What about that? What about that? And he came back and just said, like, you're right. This is crazy. Everything we do to debunk it proves it.
Jeez.
You
Well,
know?
we were saying, you mentioned something a little earlier saying we shouldn't be able to see the sun, we shouldn't be able to see the stars. Why is that? Why should we not be able to see it? And why, what is your I guess basis that the earth, that the sun is not 93 miles away, a million miles away? Because I'm looking at the sun, it seems to be a lot closer. The moon is the thing that really gets to me, because I look at it and it just doesn't s seem anything like it's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, well, for starters, they've changed the distance of the sun. 93 million miles away was their latest calculation. But if you go back in history, that has changed many, many, many times. And there's a thing called the inverse square law, which we all can go out and prove right now with a flashlight on your garage door. So when you go hold a flashlight up to your garage wall or your wall in your room, for starters, you can just go in your living room. You will see the beam of the flashlight very intensely focused on the wall. You'll see the beam real bright where the beam of the flashlight is, and the rest of the wall is not lit up. And every meter you walk back, that light will get twice as wide and half as intense. And every meter you go back, it will do the same. In other words, when you put your flashlight on your garage wall and walk back 50 meters from the house, your flashlight won't put a hot spot on the garage anymore. It will light up the whole garage very dimly, evenly, right? So the sun cannot be lighting up the earth from 93 million miles away because every meter from the sun you are, the light would be half as bright and half as intense. Now you can read a book to the full moon. If you go outside on a full moon, you can read a book to the full moon. That's allegedly the sunlight bouncing off the moon, 280,000 miles away from the Earth, bouncing back to you, and it's so intense that you could read a book to it. That means every meter you got closer to the moon from where you're reading the book, that light would be twice as bright, twice as intense in every meter. Now extrapolate that to 280,000 miles. If you were on the moon, it would be as bright as the sun. And you see the same when you see Jupiter or Venus in the sky. How bright is Jupiter, right? Or Saturn or Uranus? How bright is that little ball you see in the sky? So you're telling me the sun went another 90 million miles past you to that planet and bounced it back to you reflectively, inverse squarely? You would never even see them. You wouldn't even see the sun. There's no way.
It seems so
No
strange. And
way.
also, when those guys were supposedly on the moon, I thought that the moon would be very bright. And then they show the moon that, when they show that picture of the Earth and the distance from the moon, the Earth is, what is it, three times the size of the moon? You would think that if they're on the
Four.
moon, that four times, you would think the Earth would be gigantic. That's all you would see from the moon would be like this big thing of the Earth. And it seems like it's fading away, like it's really far away. That when I saw that image and somebody was showing that to me, that's when I think it really kind of clicked in. I was like, this doesn't make any sense. I don't know where we are, what this is, but that does not add up. I don't understand. I'm questioning that.
And
And
Rob Skiva went in, and I can put this in post edit if you want. Rob Skiva went into the NASA image and showed that the digital square overlay. Yeah, for starters, you're right. The Earth should look, when you look at a full moon at night and take a picture, it's huge in the sky. You've seen it yourself. If the Earth were four times bigger than the sun, then the moon would look four times bigger than it does on a full moon. These astronauts took this picture, the Earth looks tiny. But Rob Skiba went into the NASA videos right off their webpage and then showed that it was digitally overlaid.
Right. So did they have this technology, this advanced technology, years ago, and they were just kind of like leaking out? Because I was looking at some of the images that they've had, and I think it was WikiLeaks that was showing that the moon landing was not what it was supposed to be. It looked very obvious that it was staged. But
pretty obvious. And like you said, like when you see the footage of them running around on the moon, it's a dark gray, dusty ball. Yeah. But again, if you can read a book with the inverse square law, if the sunlight is reflecting off the moon from 280,000 miles away and you can read a book to it, then by the time you got to the surface of the moon, it should be as bright as the sun. And they're running around in this dusty gray ball. That's impossible. And Ross and I, Ross has a electric heat meter. So we went out over Christmas this year in the moonlight. There was a full moon right after Christmas this year. And behind the trees, it's 1.5 degrees warmer than in the moonlight. So when you shine this electric thermometer on the ground in the moonlight, it's 1.5 degrees colder than the light in the shade from the moonlight behind a tree, which means the moon is a plasma phenomenon. The only time a light can be colder is some kind of holographic or plasma phenomenon. If the heat of the sun is bouncing off the moon 280,000 miles away and heating your ground, then the moonlight should be hotter. So how can you be behind the shadow of a tree in the dark of night with a moonlight, and the moonlight's colder by 1.5 degrees? That cannot be radiative sunlight. That's impossible. Impossible. There's no physics that would disagree with this.
Well, they've had all these shows. This is where, History Channel, and they've got all these different things talking about space, place exploration. They have all these scientists doing degrees in astronomy. How, I'm just trying to wrap my head around this. How is this, let's say, this elaborate system able to be constructed? What is it based upon? Because there are people who, let's say, for example, are very critical thinking skills. There are some people who would be considered to be very anarchist, pro-freedom people that maybe question everything else. But then they won't question the reality of space. So how is this elaborate system able to be constructed that it gives all these rules and that people are taking courses in and that everyone's fascinated with space and it seems to stick? How is that able to work? How are so many people able to believe in that? What is the foundation for that?
Well, for starters, like when that's a good point, Ryan, when you see History Channel, right, or even Discovery or whatever, you're looking at TV. Now, in this day and age, nobody believes a word that pops out of their television set, right? Nobody believes television is telling you the truth. But when History Channel comes on the same TV, right?
Yep.
Discovery Channel. Oh, those two, though, they're telling the truth. But all the rest of the TV is bullshit. But those two channels are telling the truth, right? So for starters, the fact that you're seeing it on TV should be your first question. But what I think your real question is, how could all these professional trusted astronomers and scientists, right, how could they be wrong? Well, because they went through the same indoctrination that we did through schooling, but they went through more because people like you and I, or I don't know your history, but after normal people get out of high school and even college, you don't give a shit about astronomy anymore. You just had to learn it for school and get your credit, right? But imagine you go to college for astronomy, and then, they're just more indoctrination. So you and I just got the indoctrination stopped by the time we left high school and didn't care anymore. But if you and I went into school to be one of those people, you would get quadruple the indoctrination, and they can't prove any of it. But as you've been through school yourself.
Yeah.
School just tells you to answer the questions they tell, right? You get tested on, can you repeat what we told you? Not, can you think enough to debunk what we told you? You've never gotten out of school by saying your whole test is bogus. Nobody ever got an A for going, bullshit, this test is wrong. I refuse to take it. Have you, right? You'd be down in the principal's office immediately, right? So that's how it works. Like when it's compartmentalized and indoctrinated, and that's why I don't, I am a flat earther, but I don't even debate non-flat earthers because I was one. And one of the problems you have when you get into these debates is I know no flat earther who turned flat earth and then went back to the ball model. None. But every flat earther I know did believe in the ball model at once. Now they're debating a person who's a ball earther who never went flat earth. You see, so the flat earther has the advantage of I was like you once, and I've now seen this side. And now I'm supposed to debate you who's never even seen the side I'm talking about. So how can we have a meaningful debate? Because you're going to argue to death where I used to be. And I understand why you're there. And I'm trying to get you to see what I see now. And you will never have a meaningful debate because the meaning of a debate is to meet in the middle, but nobody will ever go back to that. So it's you're just getting constant arguments from people because the flat earth people are saying, I used to be like you, man. I used to think like you. I used to be like you. I know exactly where you're coming from. And this person is saying, I've never been a flat earther. I don't know what you're talking about, and I never will be. So how can you meet in the middle? You just won't. It won't happen. It's a waste of energy.
No, actually, I think there might be a middle explanation for it. And this is just my theory, Steve. Tell me to agree or disagree, but I that people perceive different realities. They say people don't perceive reality the same. And I wonder if certain people are experiencing a certain aspect of the matrix differently. At one point, maybe some people actually are in a place where the Earth is round for some reason, or it is round, or they experience space, and people who are experiencing something else are seeing something completely different or completely different reality. So at one point, I really it, my perspective is just shifting a lot. I'm just things are just not adding up. I'm questioning it and just wanting to know from where you can gauge from your research. Okay, if the Earth is not a sphere, what exactly is it? Is it an oval shape? Is it an actual plane of existence? How would you describe it from what you research?
Well, I mean, it's such a good point, Ryan. For starters, you're talking about perception, right? And I explain this like we all have a box around our head saying, what is possible? And where we got the ideas of what is possible is through indoctrination and schooling systems. So if what is really going on is outside of your perceivable box of what is possible, no matter what facts you throw to that person, if they don't believe that's even true, that it's possible the Earth could be flat, and that all the scientists and physicists are wrong, and that it's all wrong, you could tell them everything you want and show them everything you want, and they won't believe it. So the first thing you have is a problem, a blockade, that you are so small, closed-minded, you will never find the truth because you don't even focus your attention on a spot where the truth is possible. So that's the first problem, right? The second problem is once you get outside of that box, nobody in the flat earth community knows what it is, and they don't claim to the real ones. Now, there are bogus flat earthers and there are real flat earthers doing experiments. So there aren't anyone who claims in the flat earth community they know the true model. They
Well,
don't know.
what do you think it is? I mean, from your hypothetically speaking, from what you've observed, what do you think it is?
It doesn't really matter because what I think it is doesn't mean it is what it is,
No, it doesn't matter. I mean,
it doesn't matter.
because I mean, this is just your observation. I mean, from your assessment, from your observation, you're stating it as a matter of opinion, as a matter of observation. So, based on your observations, what do you personally conclude about what this place is?
I can tell you what it isn't.
Okay.
It's not a ball spinning through space. You put your clothes in your washing machine and you turn it on 50 miles an hour and you open your dryer and the clothes are stuck to the outside of the dryer, or you go to the carnival. I'm 52, so in my day, they probably don't have these anymore. I don't know. That you get in this carnival ride and it'd spin around and everyone would stick to the walls on the outside and the floor would drop out and you'd be stuck. One fat guy might fall to the bottom
Yeah.
like you remember.
I experienced that ride and that happened.
You know the ride, yeah. I
Nope.
hope you didn't fall to the bottom, Ryan.
Yeah.
So we know
I had a lot of candy back then.
Yeah, exactly. So we know if you're flying around at 1,000 miles an hour, the Earth would be leaving. If the Earth's 70% water and is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour, it would leave a vapor trail of water behind it, and there wouldn't be any water left on this planet. And then it's supposedly spinning at 66,000 miles an hour around the sun, traveling at 666, no coincidence there, around the galactic core. And yet you can go to Zurich, Switzerland, and see an artist stacking stones on top of each other that shouldn't fit in. Well, they're spinning at a million miles an hour in every different direction. So you know what isn't. And that's what the thing, the flat earthers are not saying they know what is. They're saying we can prove definitively what isn't happening. And that's what you're telling us is happening. What is happening, we don't know. So what you're asking is great. It's speculation, but I try to stay out of the speculation department because no one will say, Steve, if it isn't this, what is it? And what I'm saying is I can tell you what it isn't, Ryan, but I don't know either what it is. And I don't know one flat earther also who does know what it is. We do have some good speculation.
Oh, I love hearing the speculation about it. I love hearing the speculation and looking up the sun and the moon. I've seen a couple of videos. You don't know what to expect if it's manipulated or something. But I've seen things where the sun is, the planes are up in the sky and the sun's below the planes. And I wonder if the sun and the moon are more local than what they appear to be, or much closer than what they appear to be. It just seems to be that,
when an amateur balloon, so one of the problems we have is fisheye lenses and cameras versus regular lens. So when you have a GoPro, for instance, that's a fisheye lens. Everything bends. Even when you send a GoPro camera up right from the ground, immediately the back horizon, if you're in a farm town, right when that thing goes up in a weather balloon, the background farm's already bent way too much than it would be visually if you used your own eyes. So this camera is showing an earth curve that your own eyes at the same level wouldn't see. That's what GoPros do. But when they send GoPros up or NASA, the earth looks a little curved. But when you send a real regular camera lens up at 120,000 feet in the air on amateur balloons, it's flat.
I've seen those.
You've seen them.
Yeah.
And the sun is leaving a localized sunspot on the ground. So the earth is here and there's a hot, white, bright yellow, like the garage, like your flashlight on the garage when it's close, you'll see the flashlight beam really lit up bright on the garage. But as you pull it away, it should not have a spot. But yet when you send up an amateur balloon, you see a hot spot under the sun, which means it's not 93 million miles away, or else there wouldn't be a hot spot. Just like pulling a flashlight away from a garage door 93 million miles, there wouldn't be a light there, let alone a hot spot, right?
Yeah.
So it's all perspective. We saw that with the Red Bull jump. When you saw Bumgarner jumped out of the Red Bull, they fucked up. Sorry. I don't know if we're on Okay, we can use bad language. They used a GoPro. When Baumgarten got out ready to jump, the earth was curved. They used a GoPro camera. Mm. But there's a quick 3 seconds, and anyone can go look at the footage. When they opened the hatch and he was still in the craft looking straight ahead, the earth horizon was flat. Now, visual perspective, anywhere on the earth, always brings the bottom up to the middle and the top down to the middle. Now, you can do this. You can go out in the desert and take a picture of a long desert road. 5 miles is where our perspective lands. What it will look like to you in your picture is that the road is going up and the clouds come down. And 4 or 5 miles in the distance, you will see clouds meet the road. Now, no idiot would think the road 5 miles down went all the way up to the clouds. The visual, any kid in third grade art class knows how to draw perspective. The top comes down, the bottom comes up, and they meet in the middle. Baumgartner opened the door, and the earth was flat right in front of him. Then he got out, and they switched to a GoPro camera, and his spaceship's rounded. Everything's rounded, right? So it looks round down there. And that's one of the problems we have is you can use different camera lenses to manipulate visual perspective. And visual perspective the further you look down, you know, people say, well, why is that building sinking under the horizon? It's not, it's just that the perspective brings the bottom horizon up and the top down, so it looks like it. But once you have a P900, you can actually zoom in 5 miles farther than you can see, and that building will rise right back up because you've changed the visual perspective, right? Your eyes, the way your eyes work. Now, you never also see that far away. If you were at a curve and here's a skyscraper, if you were at a ball, right, and you went around the ball this way, that skyscraper would be tilted, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You're here and it's flat. And then by the time you got down here, it would look tilted back. But yet, visually, whenever as far as you go from any skyscraper or any cityscape, the buildings don't tilt back. They stay straight up.
Yeah.
They might look lower, but that's what I'm talking about, because the visual perspective, see, makes the ground come up and the top come down. But if you really went away around a ball, they would look curved like that. If you were looking at it straight on and it was straight here, by the time you went around the ball, wouldn't that look curved?
Yeah, it's a,
of course,
a very strong thing. And what about satellites? They're always saying they're putting all these satellites up, and apparently they have Google Earth. They have all these other things you can kind of zoom in from high. So, so what is your perspective on satellites? And also, how are where do these supposed cameras, these satellites, what are they? How are the people able to, how are we able to see visuals from very high up down? Where are the satellites or cameras placed?
Yeah, well, Google, if you look, Google has high altitude planes that are taking all these photographs.
Okay.
And then satellites are balloons. So that's your Starlink from SpaceX. They do NASA, their biggest budget is helium. The biggest purchasers in the world of helium are NASA. That's for their spaceship launches and also their balloons. Every time you see a satellite crash down to Earth, there is a deflated balloon next to it. And I can post edit that in later. I'll show you, like, there's a balloon attached to them all the time. Now, they're always worried, like, they tell you the rush. We have this undersea cable, communications cable, and under the ocean, and the Russians are going to cut it and we're all going to lose communications. And you're like, well, hang on a second. If we're all communicating via satellite, how are the Russians cutting this cable going to knock out communications if it's really happening through space? Now, I travel 45 minutes to work every day. When I go up to work, I work 45 minutes north. I get to one point and we're in the woods. We're in a deep, deep, heavy woods. And my cell phone bar goes from 5 bars or 4 bars down to one and none. And it knocks out for a second. Now, if it's satellites up in the sky, how come they're not still beaming down when I'm in this one train station? Because they're radio. Then I get to a funny point where we're very close. Denmark and Sweden are separated by 13 kilometers of sea. I get to this weird point right before where I'm going where my phone sometimes switches to a Swedish carrier, even though I'm in Denmark. Now, if that's not radio, if that's satellite, how would a satellite going 17,500 miles an hour through space, whipping around, know that I'm in Denmark and not Sweden? Unless it's radio towers, see? So what's happening is I'm getting so close that the closest Swedish radio tower is closer than the closest Danish radio tower. And that's why my coverage sometimes flips over to the Swedish one. And then in the next town, I get closer to the Danish radio tower and it flips back. It's not a satellite, it's radio. Go look on your roof. Your satellite dishes are not pointed straight here. They're pointed sideways. Why? Because they're looking for radio towers. Okay. If you had satellite TV, your satellite dish on your house wouldn't be looking that way. It'd be looking up. Go show me a satellite dish on a house that's pointed.
Well said. I wonder what's the highest a satellite has ever gone. I mean, is there some kind of, my understanding is that I've seen something, apparently there's a theory that there's a firmament surrounding the Earth is something that prevents things from happening, where you can only go so high up. From your perspective, what is the farthest something has ever gone away from the Earth? Is there a point where you can actually leave the immediate Earth area and kind of go farther out into the great distance, whatever you want to call it, space, if you want to call it that.
I think SpaceX rockets, when you look at the SpaceX launches, they're going higher than NASA. They do appear to be hitting something that the flat earthers would call the waters above. They look like a speedboat. They hit the water and psh, there's a spray like a speedboat. What I can say is when we send amateur balloons up with cameras, they peter out at about 100,000 feet or 120,000 feet. They never go higher. There seems to be an equilibrium point where I don't, depending on how big your balloon is, it peters out about 120,000 feet. Now, I don't know if there's a way that they can send a balloon higher, and I don't know how high up these SpaceX rockets are when they hit this thing, because I don't know. It's just visual. So again, we're talking about what do you know and what do you don't. I don't profess to know. What I can tell you is balloons themselves seem to peter out at about 120,000 feet. Now, if you had a bigger balloon like NASA's putting satellites on, maybe if you had a huge balloon, it could go even higher than 120,000 feet before it got kind of deflated. It's, you know, you're talking about like a vacuum, you know, a balloon can get, it, the higher it goes, the more the pressure on the outside goes or less. So it'll either pop or get enclosed. So I can't tell you. I can tell you most balloon launches seem to peter out at about 120,000 feet. So, and again, when you look at an amateur launch through the horizon, it's completely flat. And then NASA sends something up at 120,000 feet, and you can see like an eighth of the curve of the Earth, even though you're only at 120,000 feet. How could that, when you take the diameter of the alleged Earth, you would have to be way higher than 120,000 feet to see the curve of an eighth of the Earth, right? If it's 26,000 miles in diameter, how high would you have to be to see one eighth of that curve? Out of 26,000 miles, you'd have to be an eighth of that, which is 4,000 miles in the air until you could see that. How the hell could you see that at 120,000 feet? Impossible. Impossible.
Doesn't make any sense. When I first started doubting, or at least raising questions about the nature of this planet, one of my biggest disappointments was I was always anticipating or excited about the possibility of having communication with life forms and intelligent life from other planets, because I'm not really a fan of the human race. I think it's kind of a lot of it's pretty messed up. I mean, like there's some people on that are very pro-freedom. I love that. I love hanging out with people who are pro-peace. They seem to be in the ultra minority right now. Everyone else is like pro-war and, you know, being pro-stupid. And I was hoping to really come across an intelligent race. And then from a metaphysical perspective, I've talked to several people who've had near-death experiences, and one of the underlying themes is that apparently we are all part of the same collective mindset. We're all one mind, all points of attraction within one mind. So the fact that this universal mind is infinite, spirit's infinite, and then I'm thinking, okay, well, your physical body has limitations. Why would you be on a plane of existence that is limited and not have anything beyond that? Is this what the creator or the originator of this reality has decided? These are the rules for these particular humans. So I'm really having a hard time grasping that you come from infinity, infinite consciousness would only limit itself and limit its physical manifestations to a very, I don't want to say contained environment. Just curious from your, like a metaphysical or spiritual perspective. This is just an insight. Is there any particular reason why you think this is the way it is?
Well, I mean, Ryan, that's like what you just said is the very deepest insight a person can have. If you're limited, how could you be living in an unlimited surrounding? If you're limited, it's because you live in a limited series, you know? And when you get into Masonic mythology and syncretism and all that, the reason you're limited is because you're stuck right now in what you perceive as a limited, you're stuck here. You're not going to Mars. You're not going to ruin the Earth and fly off to Mars and Jupiter and go colonize space out there. You're stuck here for a reason, because this is it, baby. There's nothing else out there that we know in this perception. You are as above, so below. If you're limited, so is the place you live in. It's very deep that you perceive that. Like, you are way ahead of the game to even get that. So, yeah, there you are limited. Now, the Masonic teachings say that the energy, the metals, the soul, the seven bodies, the 12, seven, five, 12s, they say that a soul comes through the seven planets and then it gets put into a physical condensation, you could call it. You could say, you know, gas condenses into ice, condenses into water, right? So you're like ice. And then your next level is water, and your next level is steam. Your next level is gas, and then your next level is plasma. So, yeah, you're right. What you call the soul is like gas or plasma trapped in ice. That's what we are right here, right now. And, of course, the reason it's trapped is because it's in an environment that is conducive to ice, right? Gas is not stuck in your frying pan. When you put water in your frying pan, that's water. Well, gas is not stuck there. Gas gets out of there. The only thing stuck there is water or ice if you put it in the freezer, and that's you. So, yeah, you're here to learn and experience. And where is here? Now the question with the flat earth is, how big is here? Is it 26,000 miles around? Are there hidden lands? There are lots of old ancient maps that say there's much more land.
Yeah,
we don't know. What we know is where we are is flat. Then you also get into holographic. There's people saying simulation theory, that we're in some kind of simulation.
Right? I started to really question that. I really started to see, to look at certain things and look up at the sky at certain points.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've walked, I go out and take walks very often. I look up at the sky, and I'm sure, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, and other people have, but they call it a glitch in the matrix, where you look and you see something, and like something repeat twice, and it was like very strange, but you know where you saw it. And I wonder if this is a computer simulation just because of the moon. I'd say the moon is the biggest, I'd say the thing that I really makes me believe this is a simulation, because how can you see the moon clear as day out, so when the sun is out and you can see light coming behind it? That's when I'm like, that's weird for some reason. I don't know.
There's like Charles Fort put out the Book of the Damned, which when you read this, there are all these weird things where, like, there were no insects in Europe all of a sudden. And as soon as, it wasn't a problem until people started to notice, hang on, there's no insects in the 1800s. And suddenly it rained insects down from the sky so much that they had to hire chimney sweep kids to clean the insects off the streets and stuff. And you're like, how the fuck can insects rain down from the sky? You had this time in 1700s, I've got wood carvings, where three towns in Germany saw what we call the sky in the middle of the day. This blue sky disappeared, and there was these things that looked like in Star Wars, you know, like the Imperial starships. These things just started appearing in the sky and crosses like machines. And three towns saw it and did wood carvings and drawings to describe it like this. What we're just looking at the blue sky, and then they're gone, right? And you're like, what the hell is that? And then there's other stuff like that. There's videos recently where birds are just stuck in the sky. I saw one where this Mexican work crew's in the back of a truck, and there's a black bird over a street light just stalled in the air. And the trucks go through the light, and this worker guy just pulls out like the back of a shovel and hits this bird, and it starts flying again. But this bird wasn't hovering, like flapping its wings. It was just moving, not moving. And this guy hits it like it's a real bird, and then it takes off. So there are very weird phenomena where you can't experience it. You know, people say, oh, it's raining frogs or it's raining blood or whatever. And you're like, well, they say, oh, well, it was a hurricane over in this place. Yeah. And the frogs all dropped down, or the blood or whatever rained down, or the snakes fell down. And you're like, yeah, but why wouldn't the dirt and the stones and the rock and the leaves and the trees and what else would blow in a hurricane? Everything. How could this one thing just drop down five counties over and not everything else with it? Not drop anywhere. So there are a lot of weird, there is a lot of evidence to say that we might be in what you would call a simulation. It's very compelling.
If this is a reality show, I'd say that this is, well, I know Jeff talks about it being a phenomenal video game. But I imagine this is a reality show where, you know.
I think he's very much on the mark there. I disagree with him on the point of calling people NPCs, that they're not like, because that's, to me, I respect his opinion. It's very dehumanizing. Because there are a lot of people acting like non-player characters. Mm-hmm. But if you know that person, there's someone's aunt or mother or father, they help someone through their hardest time. That's a real person just like you. So to think that you're the star of a video game and that that person's an NPC is bullshit. Because I promise you, there's some person in that NPC's life who would, their life would be bogus without that person, right? So your perspective might be, I think that's very dehumanizing. Now, are we all NPCs? Because actually, if we're in a video game, like he says, then you're not a player character either. You're also an NPC, right? So I can get on board with the fact that we're all NPCs and that you think you're the only player character in the game from your perspective, but are you really? Are you really in control of your destiny, Ryan? Are you really in control? And you're the only one in control? Or are we all out of control thinking we're going through this thing? You see, that when you start looking at it this way, it gets a little crazy.
Yeah, it does get a little crazy. And talking to a lot of people who've had near-death experiences and also interviewing a person, a gentleman, his name is Dr. Jeffrey Long, who studied 4,000 near-death experiences, talking about is pretty wild. Yeah. When you get to this point, another common theme is that apparently when you are in pure spirit form, you pick and choose lifetimes to have various experiences. So one particular time, you may come back as a person who's very aware and what's going on, and then you may decide to come back as Jeffrey Coleman, NPC, somebody who's not aware, just to have the experience. So we don't know where everyone's coming from in their stage of evolution or what they're choosing for this particular life experience. But I guess the thing, place where I'm going with this is, what is the purpose of people who are awake and who are aware right now? I mean, the term anarchist, I think it has such a negative connotation. I always like when Larkin Rose talks about saying being a voluntarist, where you do not wish to infringe violence upon others. You just wish to, you know, voluntarily do things on your own accord.
Yeah.
But for those people, for people who are just, you know, free, who don't want to infringe upon others, it seems to be that the biggest challenge in history right now, because to be a free thinking person and to not want to comply with the act of violence towards others or having people violently oppose you, it seems very unusual. So what do you think the purpose of being free and having that consciousness right now in this darren age is?
Well, it's a good question. It's a great question. It's the question, actually. That's the question. Now, to think you're the first people in history who ever had a small minority who were want to be free anarchists and everyone else is to think it's a new experience is ridiculous. Now, there's all these ridiculous stories that the Archons are subdimensional demons because the Gnostic texts and John Land Lash wrote a book.
Yeah.
Archons are the seven planets in astrology that rule your behavior. Paracelsus said, know that the philosopher, meaning astrologer, has power over the stars and not the stars over him. The Archons are not subdimensional demons, Sophie. They're the seven planets that precipitate into reality from steam to water to dust that guide your reactions instead of your actions. The Archons are the planets. So if you're an anarchist, the Royal Arch of Freemasonry is the sun going through the summer sky. That's the Arch, the Archons. The Archons are the planets in the sky. And the Jesuits are the physical controllers of this world, not the Jews. I'm sorry, Jeff and Max and all the Jew haters right now. It's the Jesuits, not the Jews. They're setting them up. So the question is, you are being controlled because now, like the Beatles sang in All You Need Is Love, you know, the Eastern philosophy says there's nowhere you can be that isn't where you're meant to be. There's nothing you can do that can't be done. You're right where you're supposed to be. Meaning, do you have free will? Or do you think you have free will because that makes the ride more enjoyable to think you're in control? When are you really in control, Ryan? Are you really in control, or is it meant to look that way? Because if this were a video game, like Jeff's saying, I agree with Jeff on this. The video game seems more real if you seem like you're playing it. But actually, every video game you've ever played, the programmers have controlled how it finishes, no matter what decisions you make in it, right? There's no decision you can make when you play a video game that goes outside the parameters of what they programmed to happen, right? Yep. No matter if you go, I'm going to go left here. Oh, no, fuck it. They want me to go forward. I'm going to go backwards. They've already figured all that out. There's no way that game ends without a way they wanted it to end. But you feel through the game like you've been in control the whole time. But have you? Because there's not a move you're allowed to make in that game that they didn't account for and make something happen, right? Have you ever done anything in a video game that the game crashed and went, we didn't expect you to do that?
Oh, yeah. Right?
So,
oh, yeah.
So if you take that video game analogy that Jeff uses and put it into that perspective, you feel like you're in control of this video game. You might be in a video game, but the creators of the video game have made it so there's nothing you can do, free will or not, that isn't in the game. Well, because you see what I mean? The game's more enjoyable to feel like you're in control. If you knew you weren't really in control, you wouldn't play the game. It would be boring.
Yeah. And ironically, I was playing this open world game called Fallout 4.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I really started questioning the nature of our reality, just because I got to this point where, okay, I could see in the distance at one point, but then I was blocked. I said, you can't go out of bounds. I'm like, well, maybe we're on a plane right now where it looks, you can see things in the distance, but you're blocked because there's no particular reason for you to acquire any experiences for your evolution here beyond that point. That's just kind of window dressing. That's just graphics.
Yeah. And this world's like that too. How many times have you been so close to something you really want, and then something just gets in your way? All, like, you know what I mean? You just ignore everyone here. You're trying to go through your business. You're minding your own business. Mm. This place is just screwing with you constantly. You're getting letters in the mail and calls from the government. You know what I mean? And so-and-so call. You're just a person who's like, I don't want to deal with all this bullshit. And this bullshit just still keeps fucking on you constantly, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, how is it that you don't want all this bullshit and yet it keeps falling on you? People say, well, you create your own reality. So if you don't want this bullshit, you just have to pretend you don't want it. And you're like, no, it still falls on you. It's got the same limitations, you know?
Well, I do notice something. I don't know if this has happened to you, but when I've worked on myself and I have looked inside, I've tried to change things fundamentally inside or heal the part of myself, I've noticed the outside reality change. So if I've run into a series of assholes and I've worked on explaining why I'm being so upset by these particular assholes and I get to the root cause of it.
Yeah.
The tendency is that those assholes don't seem to show up as often. And so when this idea that you should be working on yourself, I think that's a really great way of actually progressing. At least that's from our perspective. I've noticed that, you know, the more I change internally, the outside world changes. So I wonder if that was
totally true. But have you noticed a new set of assholes always turn up with a new
absolutely.
You transcended the old assholes and the game's like, all right, this guy's bored with the game. Okay. Let's send him some new assholes who are even worse than the old assholes. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like no matter what you do, you just don't win in here because that's the point of the game. The philosopher Alan Watts, not Alan Watt, the Scottish broadcaster, Alan Watts with an S.
Yeah.
He put it like this, and I love this. He said, if you fell asleep every night and you could have, and you physically knew in your dream that you were in control and you could have everything you wanted every night, I'm going to be the king of such and such this night. I'm going to have orgies. I'm going to have all the money in the world. Mm-hmm. I'm going to skydive off a bot, every experience he could ever have. He said, how many nights would it be until the one thing you wanted was to not know what was going to happen to you next? Because everything you wanted to happen to you happened, right? He said, you'd get bored of that after so many nights, because after getting everything you want night after night after night after night after night, The only thing that would excite you is not knowing what's coming next. And that would put you right where you and I are right now. Wow. Wake up right here, right now, not knowing what the hell's going on, right? Every day's a new adventure. It might not be as exciting as having orgies with the king of fucking Spain and whatever, but it's more exciting because we don't know what's going to happen in 5 minutes, let alone tomorrow.
Next time when I get out of this reality and I'm in pure spirit form, I'm going to have a long talk with myself and say, we don't do this shit, not doing this anymore. You've been around for a little while. What are some of the best insights on life that you've acquired over the years, and what things that would empower other people?
The main thing I've had to learn personally the hard way is when I started waking up back in 2005, 2006, 2007, I started screaming to everyone else. You know, there's a saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Mm. It's the do-gooders who are ruining the world. You look at America, we want all you to be like us, and we're going to bomb the shit out of you unless you're not like us. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, the main thing I learned is that I don't need to put all my energy into making everyone else want this place to run like I want it to run, or that they all have to wake up, or that you're a dumb sheeple. And what I've understood is that this place is what it is, and I don't understand why it is. But again, it's the way it is because there's nothing else it can be. So I've spent less of my own personal happiness and energy trying to wake everyone up and change everything, because it's not going to happen. So what I do understand that in the video game, if you want to use that perspective, mm-hmm. the move you make in the game does change the immediate stuff around you in the game, but the whole game's already been designed, right? Mm-hmm. No matter what you do right now in the video game doesn't change the game. It just changes your experience right now and that the shit happening around you in the game. So my advice to people is that's what's going on. You don't waste all your energy and time and stuff trying to make everyone else see they're in the game or do something that will get rid of the Rothschilds and the Jesuits and the Rockefellers and the Jews, if that's your thing, or whatever you think is the problem here. They're part of the game. You're not going to change the game. You're stuck in the game. So like, don't waste your energy. Put all your energy into changing what you can change. Buckminster Fuller said, you don't defeat a system by fighting it. You defeat it by doing something new that makes that system obsolete, because people will want to come to what you're doing instead of that. If you're doing something better than that's currently going on, anyone with a common sense will come do what you're doing and not want to do that anymore. Or if you've got, if you've got a decrepit shed in the back of the property, as I say quite often, and you're building a new house, well, you can't do both. You can either go knock down the old shed or you can build a new house, but you can't do both at once. So you either got to put down the tools and stop building the new house and go knock down the shed, or you fuck the old shed and build a new house, and then people will come to that. And that is my advice to everybody. Don't worry about who's the Rockefellers, the Jews, whatever. Make a new paradigm for yourself. You do create your own immediate reality, or at least in the video game, you're having fun doing what you're doing right there in the game. So quit worrying about how the game ends or who starts or whatever. Just put your attention and energy and focus and love and attention into doing something different and new, and attract those people to you who are going to do it. Like you said, there are old people who stop harassing you because you now vibrate at the house building frequency. You used to vibrate at knocking down the shed frequency, and you got all these negative fucks who like to knock down the shed, and you were surrounded by a bunch of negative fuckers who want to knock down the shed, and you weren't happy because you're destruction. All you are is in destruction. You're negative destructors. And now you put your attention into creation, and suddenly people into creation and goodness and wholeness attract to you. But also in hermetics, you can't have goodness in creation without destruction, because you can't have hot without cold. They're just temperature. It's an illusion. Hot and cold are both temperature. There's no difference. It's an illusion of one thing called temperature. Hot is one spectrum, cold is the other. Destruction is one spectrum, and creation is the other of something called creation. So what you need the destructors to let you know you're on your path to be the creator. Otherwise, you wouldn't, if you only had destruction, you wouldn't know there was a thing called creation that it would be more fun to do. So that's my advice to people, is get rid of those fuckheads and come over here and create and have some fun. And when people see that, how come you're all having fun over here and you fuckers over here are so horrible to be around? Well, if you're in the middle, where are you going to go? You're going to go have a bad time with them? Or are you going to go over here and have a great time with them? It's common sense. You're going to go to the people having a great time, leading by example and not destroying out of reaction. You're going to go to the actors and not the reactors. That would be my advice.
Mr. Steve Halpiner, thank you for being with us today. I love that answer. That was so uplifting. And it actually is as the deep metaphysical reasoning that a lot of people would relate to, the vibration, you know, being on that certain path. But I can learn more about Steve by going to, actually, Steve, can you please tell us where people learn more about you again?
Yeah, we're called Space Busters. We have channels on BitChute is our main one, Odyssey. We have a YouTube channel, but we're always on two permanent strikes, so I don't post anything from there. And Jeff Berwick did put us on Vigilante TV. We have a Space Busters channel there, Ryan. Thanks for reaching out, by the way, man. I really appreciate you doing
it. My pleasure. My pleasure. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed having you on. And again, Steve will be speaking at an Acapulco this year, and we'll post links to that to the site. Steve, thank you so much. Okay, everyone, that concludes today's edition of the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. Special thanks to our unbelievable guest, and special thanks, as always, to our virtues, Miss Carrie O'Connor, Miss Constance Dallas, and our associate producer, Jenny Lamisa. To learn more about the Outer Limits of Inner Truth, please go to our website at outerlimitsradio.com. And till the next time we meet, my friends, I wish upon you an abundance of peace, love, and beer. Take good care, and thank you so much for listening.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.